Radio Rebell Podcast. Thema und Überschrift: Interview mit dem kalifornischen Singer-Songwriter Marcus Eaton. Der kalifornische Singer-Songwriter von Weltrang Marcus Eaton, ein legitimer Nachfolger von David Crosby, wie er von der Presse genannt wurde, präsentierte Songs seines neuen Albums What is Real, das noch für 2023 erwartet wird, zum ersten Mal in Deutschland am 11. Mai 2023 in der rebellischen Studiobühne. Nach dem Konzert hatte ich die Gelegenheit zu einem längeren Gespräch mit Marcus Eaton. Sweet like the summer rain, lost in the feeling again. Marcus.
Yeah.
Nice to have you here. Thank you very much.
Great to be here. Thanks so much.
Tonight you played songs from your new album, What is Real, which will be released soon. Do you know the date of release?
You know, I don't know the exact date because nowadays, and I'm sure you know this, that each song is kind of released one at a time. I've released two songs from the album. I released Bystander and Obvious.
Obvious.
And I may do another video and kind of promote it and see. But, you know, each if you kind of give each song its own life, then you sort of release the album when it's done. So we'll see. But I'd really like to get it out as soon as possible. I mean, most of those songs were recorded in 2020. And I just, you have to have the right way to release things, you know. So
this new album was recorded during the time of the pandemic lockdown.
Yes.
I've read. So you couldn't record your songs face to face with your musician friends. You had to send your tracks to your friends. Was that a problem for the production of the album without direct communication, without spontaneous interaction?
That's a really good question. You know, over the past few years, my production has kind of, it always starts with the guitar and the vocal. It doesn't have to, but it's just that I try to complete the song so that I play it with just guitar and a vocal like I did tonight. And I like to have other influences, but over the past few years, I've gotten used to laying down the guitar and the vocal and then sending it off, and people will surprise me with things, but that's always the, you know, the bread and butter of the piece. So I'm really lucky now because I have a really nice group of people that I can choose from, like this drummer, for example. His name is Scott, and he plays with a lot of different great musicians, but he's such a good producer that he actually listens really well to the vocal, and he never plays too much. So I sent him a couple tracks. Hey, can you play on this? And then he sends me back stuff. And I'm like, wow, this is awesome. And it wouldn't really change that much even if I were there just because the strong song structure is done. I would like to experiment with that in the future. But for this, it was the songs were kind of done and pretty straightforward. So I would have loved to have been in the same room. But, you know, it's just one of those things. Yeah.
In the credits of your new song program, we can read that you played and recorded a lot of instruments on your own.
Yes.
You played synthesizer, bass, even drums. Of course, different kinds of guitars. And then you added piano, cello, and violin contributions from your friends.
Yes.
Playing a lot of instruments on your own, does that mean that you want to have more control in the process of arranging your music?
Oh, that's a good question. Some of it's out of, you know, some of it was out of necessity. And some of it was just kind of out of the, like bass is a really good example. I've gotten to the point with songs where I know exactly what I want the bass to play and I'll lay down a temporary bass part and then I'll send it to somebody. And my guitar parts are so specific that once the drummer lays his thing down and I really like the groove, the bass part and the guitar part really have the same root note. Okay. And there's not that much room for the bass to kind of do other things. Again, I love experimenting with that, but since I pretty much know exactly what I wanted, that was kind of the choice that I made for this. And it's just fun. I mean, mm-hmm. it's really fun. I had my friend, my Lise, play on Bystander, and she's incredible. And she just did something so cool. But that took us a while, you know, it took us a while to kind of like nail the part. And that's just production. Like you have to sit in you have to put on a different hat. You know, I have to put on my producer hat and say, okay, let's get this bass part done and not think about anything but that. And, that worked out really well. And I mean, I love collaborating, but sometimes it's just really fun to just be like, okay, I know what I want, lay it down. That's the part and don't mess with it. Because I've also had other things where I've sent that same bass part off and had a friend play on it. It was an amazing bassist. And I'm like, oh, I love it. But they just played too much. Mm-hmm. They need to just play less mm-hmm. parts and play for the song. But, you know, it's all experimentation until it's done. Yeah. So.
And your latest single, we can hear a lot of electronic sounds. Do mm-hmm. you try to develop your style of guitar-based singer-songwriter music now in a new direction, more electronic?
Yeah, you know, it's just something that I kind of started experimenting. And what's really interesting about it is that most of those parts that sound electronic are still guitar.
Oh, I see.
And so it was interesting, like on Bystander, I think you're talking about.
Yeah, that's right.
I used this plugin and I played this electric guitar part and I ran it through the plugin and I adjusted a few things and I was like, that is really cool. It sounds like a keyboard.
Yeah.
And I just ended up really loving the sound. And I don't think about it in terms of trying to classify it too much, but I really do love some of those electronic elements as long as there's still a really good pulse, a human pulse.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's kind of an interesting juxtaposition to have, like, for example, an acoustic against a really electronic mm-hmm. part. Because it creates a really nice, it's like a painting with mm-hmm. that's got a really nice background mm-hmm. that's really dark, and then the stuff that's in front that's really light really stands out. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like that's the juxtaposition of mm-hmm. electronic with acoustic guitar or just with real instruments on the top. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of electronic stuff is all electronic. It's all keys, all keyboard, bass.
Yes.
All, you know, the vocals are vocoder and stuff like that. So I like putting those human elements next to the electronic stuff. Yeah, so
understand.
Yeah.
In the arrangements of your new songs, you often use classical instruments like violin, viola, cello.
Mm-hmm.
So some of your new songs sound a bit more like a classical chamber music.
Yeah.
Is that kind of a new approach?
Well, this is interesting because of the pandemic, there's one string player in particular named Megan, and Megan Cassidy, who's a friend of mine, she's like the top call viola player in London. Mm. She also happens to play violin, which I didn't even know that she played violin, but she called me right after the pandemic kind of started. She says, Marcus, I really need to set up my home studio. And I was suggested to get this gear. Can you help me? And I said, yeah, sure. And she sent me the list that her friend sent to her. And I said, yeah, that's what you should get. She goes, please send me something for me to play on. My whole goal for her was to play on Obvious, the song Obvious. Mm-hmm. So that was the first thing I sent. I said, Megan, you got to play on this. And she was recording to her iPad. I mean, this is what's so cool about technology. She had just a little cheap mic through a little, you know, processor, an A to D converter, just a little whatever it was, into her iPad and sent me these parts back that were just like, oh my God, this is beautiful. But the thing about the strings is that I wanted to incorporate strings more because they just have such a heartfelt emotion to them. And, you know, they use them for film for a reason because it really touches your heart. Mm. And I felt like I played with her live as well, and mm-hmm. there's this other amazing cellist that's on the album named Giovanna Famulare. Mm-hmm. She's from Rome. And playing with these girls, just it's really emotive. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like my music's pretty emotional anyway, but I think that just adding them is just like, wow. It takes you just over the top to the next level of emotion. And that's what I love about strings. So it just had to happen. Mm-hmm. And then there's a song called Down to This that just, she did like 30 parts for, and we just kept adding, and I was like, okay, this is like an orchestra. And she did all the violin and viola. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, I ended up getting my friend, her friend also, Gabriella Swallow, to play cello. She's another top cellist in London. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like a mishmash. And then as it went along, it was like, okay, we're going to add more strings. And it was really cool. So I can't wait for everybody to hear it, because it's just so layered and fun, you know.
I've seen a video on YouTube in Rome. You played it live with this Italian cello players.
Yes.
And it is a beautiful atmosphere.
Oh, yeah.
You work beautiful together, and it's great. It's,
oh, yeah.
The feeling is wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah, that's Giovanna. She's
Giovanna.
It works. It really works with my music, and I just think that it really just adds. Strings are interesting, too, because what I do is really percussive.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have an instrument that's really laying something down that's just really consistent and legato, and also dark. It creates, like I said, that thing where it's like the backdrop of a painting, and then my stuff stands out on top of it. So it's really nice. I think in the future I'd really love to do a tour with strings, you know.
Yeah. From where do you get your inspirations writing new lyrics and composing new melodies?
Oh man, that's a good question.
Always the same question.
Yeah, no, I think it comes from everywhere.
Yeah,
and I think that my job is just to be ready for it. And I've thought about this a lot. You know, in the past, you've probably talked to musicians about this before, but they used to say, you have a genius instead of you are a genius. And in the past, years and years, like hundreds of years ago, they would say, like, you have a muse that comes to visit you, and the muse gives you this thing. And I believe that you're tapped into something that sometimes is not you. It just seems like you're a conduit for whatever's coming to you. And sometimes songs just appear in this really miraculous way. And like the title track, What Is Real, I was going through a pretty hard time, like right, I guess that was in 2019, and I was just having a bunch of anxiety. It was almost like a preemptive anxiety before 2020 or something. And I went home and I just started thinking, and I started playing the guitar, and that song almost came out immediately. And it really just, they come from all sorts of places. I also think like Bystander was something that was really quite political. And it was based around, you know, a lot of these, the racial things that we've had in the United States, you know, where there's somebody getting killed by the cops and people are just standing there. And I was just like, man, you know, that's a crime in and of itself, too. I understand there's certain things that are really, really dangerous for people. But, you know, there's a lot of people just standing by while this terrible stuff happens, and they're clearly able to do something and they don't stop it, and they're filming it. In the case that I was talking about, the film actually changed the world, but it was just kind of exploring that idea. So that's some of the lyrical content comes from just kind of being aware of what's happening politically. But on the other hand, you know, there's things that you don't want to be attached to that stuff either. And you want to take people on a journey. So I think an album should make you really happy. Mm-hmm. And then it should take you into a place where you're thinking about stuff. And then I think it should touch your heart more than anything. So it comes from all sorts of places. Mm-hmm. And then the guitar parts a lot of times inspire the lyrics. I'll come up with a guitar part first. I'll play something and I'll just kind of close my eyes and be like, okay, what does this inspire? And usually that's where it comes from. Mm-hmm. I say like, oh, this is something that's really evoking this emotion for me. And it really matches that way. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how my writing style is like that.
So you start with a guitar pattern.
Yeah.
Then you add a melody.
Yeah, exactly.
And afterwards you sing lyrics.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Yeah. Sometimes I'll even record it to my phone. Like one of my songs called Handed Down. I came up with a guitar part and I was like, oh, this is really beautiful. And I would go on this hike every day out in nature, and I love nature. And so I went out, and these lyrics just kind of came to me while I was on the hike, and I wrote them down, and they fit perfectly. That's how the song was born. And sometimes that's it. And you know, I think any writer would tell you this, it's different every time. Mm-hmm. You can't do the same thing again. Yeah. And he's just like, you know, even though you've done it for a long time, I'll sit down and write the next song and be like, I don't know how to do this. So it's cool that way. It's very challenging.
In your compositions, we can hear a lot of open chords.
Yeah.
Do you use special open tunings?
Yeah.
You said you've stolen it from yeah. Crosby, and yeah. he maybe stole it from Joni Mitchell.
Oh, I think Crosby probably stole all of those from Joni Mitchell. I think that's the case, just because, I mean, he produced her first album, and I think he was kind of like, oh, what's that? What are you doing there, you know? Mm. And I think it's pretty funny just because he was so into those, but actually he's the one that really gave me the confidence to do it. And this sounds really funny to say, but when I was younger and I first started playing, we didn't have guitar tuners on stage. So like to go into another tuning was like an event. It was like, oh my God, how many? And so I just stopped using, I didn't do tunings except for drop D. That was the only one I did. And then when I started playing with Crosby again, then we started trading tunings. And I said, well, I knew a bunch of them. And I showed him some. And he's like, whoa, I've never seen that. We started trading ideas. And he kind of gave me the confidence to go for it. And of course, at that time, like then I had more than one guitar and I had a tuner on stage. That's mm-hmm. the most important thing. Mm-hmm. So we traded some. And his last album had, you know, some tunings that I showed him that were really cool. I mean, it was really fun to just, sometimes he would send me stuff on his phone. Check this out. You're not going to believe this. One of these ones that I, on my song, Sunrise Lets You Down, mm-hmm. is a really interesting tuning. No, that's the tuning for Deja Vu. Sorry, it's another song of mine. Closer is this E flat tuning that he uh-huh. came up with. And one night he's like, man, you got to check this out. Okay, here it is. You know, he wrote it down. He called me on my phone. Check this out, man. And then we just trade back. It was really funny. Mm-hmm. It was really fun. That was a fun time, actually. Yeah. A really fun time. So,
a lot of your songs start with special guitar patterns. You play mm-hmm. very fast a structure of notes,
mm-hmm.
Like a fast riff or arpeggios,
yeah.
similar like that.
Mm-hmm.
And those continue through the song.
Yeah.
And I think this is typical for your compositions. And it, of course, sounds great. Is that your kind of special composition characteristic?
Yeah, I think so. Because there's this, I don't know how to explain it here, but there's kind of like this really vast worlds of difference. There's the singer-songwriter who plays three chords on guitar. And then there's like this prodigy musician, and I love all of it. I love all, like the whole spectrum. But to me, guitar is it's like a piano. You can do anything on it. And if you see a pianist play something, this, like if you think about Elton John or, you know, some of these guys like Billy Joel, they're sitting there on the piano doing really crazy stuff. I mean, it's quite complex, but the fact that it's a full range instrument, it's not distracting. It's just they're doing this stuff and you're used to hearing it. Mm. But with guitar, you're not so used to hearing something that's more complex, partially because it's very hard to sing and play that at the same time. And then the other factor is just that people that are singer-songwriters just tend to stick in that four-chord zone. And I just think there's so much more room for something intricate, like Obvious is a good example, mm-hmm. that song. It has like a classical motif where it has something that's really beautiful, but if you played it on piano, it would sound totally natural. Uh-huh. Or if you played it on strings and sang it, you'd be like, oh my God, that's a string piece. But on guitar, it's very unique. Mm-hmm. And I love that because I just want to take people somewhere different. I don't need to explore the singer-songwriter zone. Mm-hmm. And I love that stuff, but it's just never, you know, my dad's really good at that. My dad's a great singer-songwriter. Yes,
I know.
He can, and he can take those chords and just do these amazing things. And I've never been able to do that. But I was just more interested in other types of music that took me somewhere that wasn't that predictable, I guess, maybe. But
sometimes you play together with your father and even recording or live concerts.
We've done some recording, and I mean, I'd like to do more of that, you know, but I need to just get him out of his comfort zone. Mm-hmm. I think he needs to come over to Europe and we need to sit for like a month mm-hmm. and just, I need to like force mm-hmm. him to write some songs with me.
It's really fine to see the father and the son working together, and
he fits
perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, he's also just really good. I mean, I'm very lucky because, you know, I grew up around him and he's got, he's better than most of the people that are, I mean, I'm not saying this because I'm his son, but he's better than most people that are really successful at music.
Yeah.
And he had a really nice shot back in the 70s in a way, but they just never promoted it properly. Yeah. But he's just, man, he's got some amazing songs. Mm. So I'm lucky to have that as as an influence.
Yeah.
But it also set the bar really high because I'm pretty opinionated. You know, I can't listen to certain things and go like, yeah, that's amazing. And I'm like, yeah, well, yeah, that's pretty cool.
You know? And I think,
you know,
your techniques as a guitar player is a little bit more experienced than that your father's.
He's got a different mode, but he's also like, he's an incredible pianist.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Plays piano, sings. Oh. I mean, he plays harmonica really well, and he just like, he's one of those original, we call them the original badasses, you know, like the guys that came out in the 70s that are just amazing. So
it seems that you can do on a guitar everything. You finger picking, strumming like with pick, you tapping, hammering, and even this strange bow you play.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
What kind of techniques are imagined to develop more?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I'm always looking and I'm always listening to, you know, like for example, flamenco guys.
Oh,
I just think that stuff is crazy.
Absolutely.
It's just so, and it's so passionate and it connects with people.
Mm-hmm.
So I love incorporating all those styles. And the bow is something totally unique and cool. It's wild.
Wild.
I can't believe you could do it on guitar. I found this thing. It's called a Picasso bow.
Yeah.
And it popped up as an ad on Instagram. And I saw it and was like, wow, okay, I need to see this thing. And I got it. And it took a while to make it sound good just because there are different types of rosin, just like with a bow. And I finally locked into this one and I was like, man, this thing sounds incredible. So I've been using that for recording now. So I've done string section parts that sound like you would never know. If I play these for you, you'd be like, oh, that's cool. It's a string part.
Mm-hmm.
It's guitar.
Uh-huh.
So that is really cool. And actually just for a show like you saw tonight, for a solo show, to have more textures like that is just crazy. Just with something so small, because I'm one guy with one guitar and you're looking for all those textures. So I feel like that's just kind of a miraculous little device.
And you don't destruct the strings like a saw.
No, no. It's just, you have to wipe the rosin off. You know, they get a little bit sticky, but yeah, that thing's just amazing.
Yeah.
So that's been pretty fun. It's been really fun to have that thing. So
all the people were looking. What is doing? What's happening there?
Yeah, it's brand new. And no one's seen it. No one's seen it before. And I mean, that's what's really fun. I mean, I feel like I have the opportunity to be kind of on the front edge, leading edge of this stuff. And it's so weird because, you know, guitar's been around forever. People have been around doing interesting things with a guitar. But I think there's something with acoustic that hasn't been done. Maybe I sound naive for saying that, but I really think that I have the opportunity to actually innovate.
You're perfect in this technique.
Oh, thanks.
With a bow.
Thank
absolutely.
You. Yeah, it's fun.
Play Vivaldi.
Maybe I'll get a couple more guitarists and we'll just start doing Bach stuff.
So please talk about your lyrics. What are the main themes you are writing about?
Oh, man. I'm really... like I was saying before, I mean, I'm really into nature. There's a lot of nature themes, but a lot of the nature themes are also metaphorical, of course. But I also just, I really care about what's going on with the world. I care about the environment.
Yep.
And overall, I think that people just really need to kind of get back in touch with themselves.
Yeah.
And especially after COVID, it's like people, they're out of their minds right now. And I think they're actually in their minds and not living from their hearts a lot. So I think a lot of my music is kind of just trying to, I think that you write songs for yourself. And at the same time, when you're really honest with yourself, then other people engage and really can relate to those ideas.
Yeah.
So this new song, What Is Real, is a really good example. I mean, that's how I feel. And I think that when you can tap into that honesty And when you're vulnerable in that sense, I think that it really opens people up to their own experience. And I think that's the most important thing. So my lyrics, I really just kind of have all of these things. I love all sorts of stuff. I mean, I'm passionate about, I used to be a falconer. I was really into birds. I don't know if I ever told you that. Yeah. So I have all these songs with bird themes in them. Cause I used to train falcons my mom and I were rehabilitating injured animals and injured birds of prey for a long time when I was a kid. So, I mean, that really impacted me cause I love animals. I love nature. And I think that these are the things that matter to me, like in the world. If a kid has an interaction with an animal like that, they will treat the environment differently for sure. If they ever get to see a falcon or a hawk up close or a fox, we had foxes, we took them to school and, you know, we'd take them in and just talk to kids about them in grade schools. And one kid one day was like, wow, my dad shoots those. I'm going to tell him that they're really nice animals. But I mean, that can impact you for your whole life.
Yeah.
So I just think like all of that has kind of informed my music, and I'm not like on, you know, some sort of trip about it. I'm not actually really consciously thinking about it, but it's just part of who I am. And it kind of translates into the music, whether I want it to or not. So wherever I am, there are all these kind of common themes, and I'm always looking for birds, and I'm a bird nerd. That's what I am.
A bird nerd. Yeah. Fine. Wonderful. Yeah. In your new song, Step Aside, you sing, "When will history stop repeating and a new world begin?" Later on, you sing,
"Yeah."
This reminds you want to fight, so I offer you the dove. Because what really matters in this world is just peace and love.
Yeah.
This reminds me, of course, in the message of the hippies, love, peace, and understanding. Yeah. Do you think this message can help us in these times now of war, of climate crisis, inflation, and so on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I think that my experience with Crosby was a really positive. I mean, it had really negative shades because he's a very polarizing person, and it had really positive shades. It was like two of the exact opposite experiences at one time. But the things that I got from him were really, really positive. And he had this thing that he kept saying. He said, you know, we were right about everything in the 60s. That's what he said. We were right about everything. We were right about peace.
Yep.
We were right about love. And he's like, the only thing that we were wrong about was all the drugs. Because the drugs ended up killing a lot of people and ruining their lives. And he's not talking about pot. He's talking about people getting into heroin. He was a heroin addict, all of that stuff. But yeah, I kind of, in a way, when I first wrote that line, I was like, oh man, I don't know. That's a little bit cheesy. But then it was like, no, actually, it's not cheesy at all. It's actually the truth.
Yes.
And I just felt like that kind of came from him, I think, because I thought, yeah, this is cool. And it was almost like a Stephen Stills line. It was almost, what was the one, when the eagle flies with the dove in their song, you know? I thought that was cool. And yeah, and it's also talking about the new era needs to come in, because I just feel like we have this opportunity to evolve as humans. And I think in the past, we used to have an option of evolving. Now we don't have the option. We have to evolve. And man, COVID is just, people are messed up right now. We need each other, and we have this collective world, but everybody thinks they live in their own world, but they don't. And there's a lot of loneliness. And so I think about this stuff a lot, and I try to, you know, write some songs that are going to bring people some hope and happiness. You know, that's the goal.
That's it.
So,
So love and peace, as you said, it was the philosophy also for David Crosby. As we know, he died in January. He was a friend of yours. You played with him live in concert. You recorded with him. You wrote songs together with him. So you knew him very well. And if you look back, what will you remember with David Crosby?
Oh, man, he's just like the most unique person probably that I've ever met. He's so unique and so real. He is very real. And in almost every way, what you see is what you get. And he was like an 85, I think he was 85 when he passed away. He was like an 85 year old child. You know, he was so passionate about acoustic guitar. Mm. And when we first got together, he was just, I mean, we called it, we have this expression in English, we were geeking out. Mm-hmm. It just means we were just total nerds going, oh my God, what is this guitar made out of? What's that tuning? Mm-hmm. What's this? And it felt like it was like my long lost brother. Mm-hmm. It was so cool, especially mm-hmm. when I first met him. And I was almost beside myself, but I was kind of lucky because I'm a lot younger than him. So I was kind of ignorant to, I knew who he was, but I didn't know all the stuff he had done. And that actually helped me so that I wasn't intimidated in a way. I think if I had known all that stuff, I would have been like, oh my God. You know, I don't think I would have been able to play in front of him without being really nervous. And I never felt that with him. But he was a really, you know, I got some really great things from him. And he really showed me a lot about the music business. He introduced me to a lot of great people. And we had some amazing times together, and he just treated me like a friend, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'd go to his house, and he'd be, hey, man, you want to come up this weekend? Sure. I'd go up there. We'd write a song. They had a guest room. I'd stay in their guest room, wake up in the morning. Mm-hmm. We'd make coffee together. And just, I mean, it was really just a unique thing. I'm very lucky, and that's, I mean, it's hard to encapsulate the whole thing in one statement. But, yeah. I'm really grateful to him, and I'm grateful for the opportunity that I had to play with him. And we really fed off of each other. And so it's awesome. I love his wife, Jan. I hope she's doing okay, because it's hard. It's hard to lose somebody after being married for a long, long time. But I'm confident that she'll do fine. And you know, obviously his kids and everything. And he was a big personality. And he did everything that he ever wanted to do, he got to do. So he was a really interesting person to talk to. He had so many great stories. He read more than anybody I've ever talked to. I mean, he just, I'd say, hey, do you have any book recommendations? He goes, which genre? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, any genre. He's like, well, you want sci-fi? You want this, that, the other, you know? So he was just a voracious reader, smart guy, opinionated. But I liked that too, you know. So anyway, that's some of it.
You also worked together, played together with his son, Raymond.
Yes, yes.
And you recorded with him together?
Yes.
Songs
yeah, composed James, together? James is, he was kind of the producer on all of that. He was the producer. And also just like a really, really great musician, great pianist. Yeah. But yeah. Fascinating story, which you probably know. You know, he was adopted by another family.
I know.
And then he met Crosby when he was in his 30s. And so it was a really interesting dynamic with him and me and Crosby. And it was a really nice genesis. And things were just coming out of that were pretty magical. And it's kind of unfortunate because the timing was wrong. It was sort of in between the Crosby, Stills, and Nash tours. Mm-hmm. So they... like the way that it was managed at the time, you know, his managers were kind of like, okay, let's hurry up and get this done so we can get back on the road, because that was the bread and butter gig. And it didn't really get its enough space. And a couple of years later, he stopped doing CSN and then went into his thing. And I wish we could have continued it then. But by that time, he's like the kid that's just like, oh, look, a new shiny toy. You know, he would just go towards the next thing. And so that's what he was doing. He said, oh man, I found this guy from Snarky Puppy. And he went and did an album with him like right away. He doesn't think about anything else. He's just thought about moving forward. That's another pretty cool lesson, actually. He never thought about the past. When people would ask him about Woodstock, he'd be like, oh my God.
Oh God.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, the further away from you, the further away you get from it, the bigger it gets. So anyway, he's just a fascinating guy. And James is an amazing musician. So hopefully he'll, you know, still do some stuff, but we'll see what happens.
On YouTube, I've seen a video, you both playing together.
Yes.
A song, I think, from you. He plays, of course, the piano.
Yes.
And you play guitar, and it's very intimate
yeah.
feeling
yes.
between you both musicians.
Is yeah, he was, I mean, he's amazing. I wish that, I would like to work more with him, you know. He's just an amazing, amazing pianist, and he's kind of like a really good counterpart for me because he really listens, and he's just dynamite. He played with us a couple times, but he's moved to New Mexico now, you know,
really?
So he moved, and now I'm
living there?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, he's just, he's kind of like me. I think he just was ready to do something different, you know, and so I'm headed to Italy, he's headed to, but maybe in the future, yeah. you know, who knows? Okay. I mean, he's killer. I love his playing.
Do you think you stand as a musician and artist in the tradition of David Crosby, and you can continue what he began?
You know, I've thought about that, and I think that I hope that I can continue the message that they had, because like we spoke about, they were right. They were right, and they were right on the forefront of the a really important movement, and you know, everything that they stood for. You know, during the Vietnam War, I mean, they wrote Ohio when that happened, and that's a really important job. And I just think that they took it on their shoulders to do that, and they also brought a lot of joy to people. So, yeah, I hope that I can continue that and be in the same vein. And I think it's the same as my dad, too. I have to say, like, that's the same lineage that he had. But I think what's cool about it is, like, I can pull from that. And then I can also pull from the new stuff, and I kind of have this hybrid thing, which is just, but the message needs to continue, and it's the same message. It's just, it's like the peace and love thing, but it's real. And they were also environmentalists, and they really cared.
Really?
Even back in the 70s, they could see what was going on, and that's what we need to do. We have to, that's what we have. We have to take care of the earth. That's why, you know. That's the only thing we've got.
You're right. You wrote and performed the soundtrack for the documentary, David Crosby, Remember My Name. The director of this film was your brother, A.J. Eaton. How was it working with your brother, and how was it to write and play music for a documentary about this hero, about David Crosby, who did you know very well? And
Well, working with my brother was hell.
Hell? But
no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I had to say that. I hope he hears this. no, it was really interesting because I was really bummed out because at the end of the album that I did with Crosby, he went just straight into another thing, and I felt really left out of it. And so I was really bummed out. And just at the same time, I kind of helped my brother put that together because I introduced him to Crosby and that I started the ball rolling with the whole thing and he kept going and it kept growing. And so when the documentary started, I just felt really was like, oh man, you know, like one day my brother went, for example, oh, I'm going to go see Crosby rehearse. And I was like, okay, have fun. They went and met Paul McCartney because he was rehearsing next door. And I was just like, man, I was jealous because I wanted to be there. So after a while, I kind of chilled out. And at the very end of the film, you know, I kept telling my brother, like, hey man, I know what the score should be really cool. And he said, hey, do you want to try something at the very end? And I was like, yeah, of course. And it worked perfectly. And it was really cool because also Bill Lawrence, this pianist that worked with me on that, he's the pianist from Snarky Puppy. He is just, that guy, I love his albums. I just love his musicianship. He is the bomb. And I got to work with him. So that was just, it was awesome. And it just worked out really well. And now I'm doing more score stuff.
I know.
And so that's like, it's a really neat thing because it really, again, you get to tap into something emotional. And I'm not using my voice, but I'm using my guitar. And to me, that was the essence of who Crosby was. He was all about acoustic guitar. I mean, he had kind of a jazz thing going on too, but Bill took part like in the jazz voice of Crosby, and I did the acoustic guitar voice. And if you watch the film, I mean, it's seamless. You don't really even know that it's score music. It just sounds like maybe it's something that could have been around at the time or something that maybe he wrote, because I also used his tunings. So I kind of felt like I was uniquely prepared because I worked with him to do something that was cinematic that represented him. So I feel really lucky. Mm-hmm. And my brother put that all together. He did an amazing job. Mm-hmm. And it was nominated for a Grammy for Best Music Film. Yes. So, yeah, it's a legacy film now. I mean, mm-hmm. he's gone, and I'm so thankful they got it done. Mm-hmm. Because there were so many moments that we were like, oh, is this ever going to happen? And film's hard because there's so much collaboration mm-hmm. and it takes a lot of people, a lot of money. And it's just like one person can pull out and just mm-hmm. like the whole thing can go crazy. Like Neil Young didn't want to let Crosby use mm-hmm. his songs because he was pissed at him. Mm-hmm. And so at a certain point they were like, well, the film can't happen because we need this song. And then they figured out they were able to use it, but they could only use a certain amount of time. I mean, it was crazy. Mm-hmm. People are pulling their hair out over it. So mm-hmm. it was a fascinating process, mm-hmm. but I'm really proud of that. And I'm thankful mm-hmm. that I got to be involved. So
on your YouTube channel, you posted a lot of instrumental music from this project.
Yeah.
Sometimes short guitar pieces, but very lovely. And one is for Joni Mitchell. And it sounds, from the voicing, from the tuning, sounds a little bit like a song from her.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course, it's your composition that's also to be heard. It's a fine music, wonderful. I found it great.
Oh, thank you.
Listen to it.
It was really fun. And, and again, like, it was just fun to tap. It was fun to tap. Like, that's the perfect example. I got to kind of tap into the Joni Mitchell mm-hmm. catalog and kind of go, okay, well, what was she thinking about this? Mm-hmm. And it was really fun. Mm-hmm, yeah. It was great.
You also worked on soundtracks for instance, for the blockbuster Netflix film, The Harder They Fall.
Oh, yeah.
And you played guitar and did compositions for other scores. Is that an important challenge for you? Is that kind of a new business for you, playing those soundtracks and
yeah, you know, it's really interesting because it's something that, I mean, this is kind of the best thing. I'm sure you can relate to this, but it's one of those things that just happened completely organically. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Crosby Association and all that, it was totally organic. I never really expected to do it, but then mm-hmm. when I got the opportunity to do it, it's one of those things where you're sitting there, you're like, I don't even know if I know how to do this, but I'm going to try it, and you do it. So it is a challenge, but with The Harder They Fall, my friend, his name is James Samuel, is the director.
Ah.
He's an amazing musician. Uh-huh. And in a way, he's a musician first and then a director second. He's super musical. Oh. And his film is really based, the whole thing's based around music. Uh-huh. So he wrote all the songs. Mm. And so those particular films, I'm just kind of playing the guitar. But that's also fun for me. I love just playing. And if somebody says, hey, come in and I want you to do this, great. That's awesome. So he's got a really unique, kind of like me, a really unique association and a love for acoustic mm-hmm. in particular. And it's also funny because I'm working on this new film that he's directing with him on the music. And I said, you know, I do play electric. Because I don't think he knew. He's like, really? Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. So I ended up playing some electric on some stuff, but I don't think he knew that I played electric. It's kind of funny, but anyway, I'm really enjoying it. And like I said, it's just a very organic thing. I fell into it mm-hmm. and I'm loving it because it's kind of like another musical release. I don't have to be attached to it. And sometimes mm-hmm. that's really good mm-hmm. because with my own music, I've gotten really caught up in like, why isn't it selling? Or mm-hmm. why aren't people listening to this and all of that? And you can really get caught up in mm-hmm. that and you can get really bummed out about it. With this, I can just let it go. Yeah. Oh yeah, I played on that. It's really mm-hmm. fun. And and those things do really well when you can let go. So.
Well, your new album is not yet released now, but you're working on new songs for a new EP or...
Yes.
Perhaps a new album. So your creativity is going on and on. And
yeah, I'm just following my muse. Following my muse. And I just, when it strikes me, I just go, okay, yeah, here's a new song. So I think I have about 6 or 7 new songs for this other album. So I'm kind of, it depends on the time frame, but I thought about doing a double album. But then I realized that, you know, in the digital world, that doesn't really make sense. But I think just having, it's really cool in a way, it's cool the way that people are consuming music because you can do one song at a time. And that's totally cool. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of make it a statement, or you can try something new and be like, okay, I want to try this and see what happens. And if the response is good, great. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, you just go to the next song. Mm-hmm. So I think that, yeah, it's going to be cool. This next one, I actually, the one that's after the new album, I'm really excited about, mm-hmm. because that's like the cutting edge stuff. New song stuff I've never tried. More strings, more guitar bow on this mm-hmm. stuff. New vocal stuff. I'm mm-hmm. still trying to, you know, learn how to sing really well. So that's another factor mm-hmm. in just, you know, trying to get to the next level, mm-hmm. basically. So
I'm excited. Do you play one of those new songs live on stage? Did you play tonight one of your...
You know, I planned to play it, but I didn't play it. Okay. Yeah. But I will play it next time I'm back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And probably something else new.
I've read during the last months you did some cooperations with other musicians like Julia Fortem.
Yes. Do you know her music?
Yes, I know. Okay. She produced a lot of album, 20 or something like that.
Yeah, she had one back in the 90s that was like really, really well received, especially mm-hmm. in the UK.
Yeah.
Like Sting is a fan of hers. Okay. And I mean, a bunch of people, but... Dominic Miller, Sting's guitarist, played on her album. He played on her album.
Really?
And they collaborated a lot. And then also this bassist, Pino Palladino, played on her mm-hmm. stuff. And he's playing on the score that I was just on. So she's just worked with some really cool people. But she had this song. It was so funny because I told her that I was into birds.
And yeah.
One day she called me and she's like, oh, my God, this. What did she say? She said, this hummingbird hit my window and I don't know what to do. What do I do? I'm just so concerned, you know? And I said, well, I'll tell you what you do. And I told her how to deal with this hummingbird. And I said, you got to mix up some sugar. You got to get some water. You get some sugar water, get a little straw. And now I'm forgetting, it may have been a hummingbird or another bird. It doesn't really matter. But she called me like a couple of days later and she's like, you know, Marcus, after I did this, it inspired a song. And so she wrote this song called Sugar Water. Mm-hmm. She's like, I think we should write this together. And she's so cool. Uh-huh. She's amazing. So she came over to my house, my apartment. We kind of wrote the song together, wrote a little bridge together and kind of finished it. It's awesome. I love the song. And it was just, she's very in touch with nature, just like I am. I mean, we have a lot in common in that respect. And so I said, well, let's record it. So we recorded it in my studio. I got my friend who's a really great drummer, this guy named Jake Reed, another guy, amazing LA guy. And then she said, you know, it would be really nice to get Lee Sklar. And I was like, I'll message him. Let's just do it. So he came over. Uh-huh. Lee Sklar, the most famous session bassist of all time, came over, played on this track, and now we need to release it. Mm-hmm. So I need to actually, when I get done here tonight, I need to message her and say, Julia, when are we releasing this? Yeah. It's a great song, Sugar Water. I love it. So, collaborations are fun like that. That was
Sugar Water is a metaphor, or is it really the food for the hummingbird?
Well, it is food. I mean, okay, let me get nerdy for a second on the bird. If you ever find a bird that's injured and they've been knocked down for a while, they're on the ground, you can actually take a little straw, you mix up a little sugar water, and then you just feed it to them through a straw. You can't get it in their nostrils, but you can get it down their beaks. And it just completely revitalizes them because they need the electrolytes. And as soon as they get that, they're almost like, bam, they're ready to go if they're okay. So that was but it's metaphorical. So, the song's metaphorical, and it's really cool. It's really, really cool. She did a great job.
So Marcus, please... to come to an end.
Yes.
Can you give me, please, a statement about your new song so I can play the song? And before I can listen to the statement you told us about the song.
Sure.
Bystander, please.
Bystander. Okay. Bystander is a song that was written. Let me tee this up properly because I want to, just a sec. I have to make sure that because it's been a while. My phone's dead. Okay. Well, there was a gentleman in the United States. You guys all saw it in the news. The cops leaned on his neck and he died. That's what happened. And I'm just, because I'm tired, I'm blanking his name right now. So if you remember, let me know. But the point is, I saw that and just thought about, oh my God, somebody actually filmed this. And there are two sides to it. The person that filmed it actually changed the world. And I thought, wow, I mean, that is amazing. They couldn't do anything because those cops were like, they would have killed somebody that jumped in there. So I thought, wow, this is just absolutely amazing. And then at the same time, I saw all these other things happening where people could have stopped somebody. You know, they could have done so much, but they just kept filming. So that's what inspired this song. And I just thought, when life calls, who answers? We don't need another bystander. Mm-hmm. And it's not just politics or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think it applies to all these things in our life. Like mm-hmm. we need to make a statement, and it takes courage. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really hard to have courage because we kind of live in this world right now where if you think differently than somebody else, you're kind of like cast out somehow, you know, but it really takes courage to do what you know is right. Even when everybody else is not doing the right thing, when you know it's right thing, you have to do it.
Yeah.
So that's what that's about. And that's the important part. So
fine.
Yeah.
Please, a statement for Obvious.
Obvious. Oh, okay. This is cool. Obvious is a song that I wrote. It's about when things are not working out in your life, it's also a sign that you're going in the right direction. And it sounds weird to say that, but I used all of this metaphors and kind of like this idea of Homer's Odyssey. Sounds really weird to say that, but it says like, either trapped by the sirens or the waves that push us back.
Remember. Yeah.
And I had this experience because I went to Italy this last fall, and my friends invited me to go on this catamaran, and I was up there with the captain, this English captain. He said, oh, these are really interesting islands out here. And I said, really, what are the? He goes, actually, those are the islands that they wrote, that Homer actually wrote the Odyssey about, where the sirens are. And I said, no way. And I got really, really excited because Obvious uses those. That's what I was thinking in my mind. That's what I visualized, like, okay. Anyway, Obvious is about going through life using these metaphors, like being held back. You think you're being held back, but it's all for your benefit sometimes. And you can't see things from a broader perspective. And so it's just about realizing that, you know, moments are precious. Don't waste your time thinking about what's not happening. And just realize that even if bad stuff's happening, you're going towards your place. And I think it's probably a really good song for musicians to hear, but it was good for me to hear. I wrote it really for, it's a very, very personal song, I think, because I'm like, yeah, I just have to remind myself that this is the case. Yeah. You know, you can't be full of doubt. It's obvious things are working out. So it's a simple idea, but I think it's relatable, hopefully.
Not simple, no.
Yeah.
Please, better way.
Better Way, okay. Better Way, I wrote that quite a while ago, but the thing is there's a new version of it coming. This is cool that you're asking me this. Better Way is about how the real truth is hidden from us if we're, you know, like the world is really trying to hide the truth from us, but I think we intuitively know the truth about things. And it was also, when I wrote it at the time, it was about two versions of the truth on TV, you know, and being confused about these things. So that one's, I think it's a little bit more explanatory, but I do think there's a better way. There's a better way of doing things, and there's a better way. I kind of spoke about it earlier, but there's a way of just living less in your mind and just doing what's right, being empathetic towards other people and doing what's right no matter what's going on around you. That's what that's about. The better way is that. So.
Okay. The last one, of course, is the title track, What Is Real?
Oh, yeah. Okay, What Is Real? What Is Real? Super personal song. I was having a lot of anxiety, and I that one just kind of came out of nowhere in one piece. It took me really not a lot of time to write that. I just think that's a song that's really relatable, and it's something where I'm asking what's real throughout the song, or the character, however you want to look at it, the character of the song is asking what's real. But by the end of the song, it said, "So to me, it's the dreams that are real." And it's just the opposite of what most people would tell you. Well, you can touch this chair, you can touch this thing, so that must be real. No, actually, it's your dreams that are real, because your dreams are the thing that keep you motivated in life. And those are the reasons that you wake up, and your passion is the reason that you keep going in life. And those are the things that end up becoming real as long as you stay focused on those. So that's what that's about. It's about dreaming, and your dreaming becoming your reality, but also questioning what's real. Because I think we all are just having this time, especially, again, I'm referencing COVID, but God, look at our news and look at all the things around us, and so many people lying all the time. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, it's a whole different lie. And we live in a very confusing time, and we have to be motivated by our passion. That's what I think. Mm-hmm. So that's what that song's about. At the end of the song, it's saying the dreams are what's real. That's it.
I think John Lennon will appreciate this idea.
Yeah, hopefully. I hope he's around somewhere listening, you know. That would be nice.
So thank you very much, Eddie. It was great.
Oh, thank
you. Your concert, the whole evening, and now this beautiful talking with you.
Oh, thank you. I love this.
Thank you very much indeed.
Well, I really appreciate it, and I can't wait to be back. And this was amazing. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.